13 before the hour. Good morning. It's Morning Air on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. This is day number two of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops Spring General Assembly in Baltimore. The front and center is enacting new standards for bishop accountability and a great debate over the role that lay people should play in their oversight. That's going to dominate the conversation, I would imagine, on day number two. It did on day number one. Let's take you live to Baltimore. Bishop Richard Sticca is the bishop of the Diocese of Knoxville, Tennessee. Bishop Sticca, thanks for giving us some time from the Bishops' Conference in monitoring the feeds coming from Baltimore. It's a very intense conversation about exactly where lay involvement should be in bishops' accountabilities. Where do you think that's going to fall?
Well, I'm not very good at predicting the end results of anything, but I'm all in favor of the laity being involved in some manner in terms of bishops' accountability. You know, it works on a local level in terms of diocesan boards. And so I think, you know, with the various options that we're looking at, I think it's important to get that independent voice. And so that's what I favor, at least.
How was day number one, Bishop Sticca?
It was good. You know, there's a lot of, you know, in the beginning of these meetings, a lot of things that, you know, we hear the message from the Holy Father, the message from the nuncio who's out of town attending something in Rome. So his number two person shared that. Bishops get together and have conversations and kind of renew acquaintances, and then we get into the work of the day. This morning, I think it's at 9 o'clock, we have regional meetings. So I belong to Region 5, so we'll spend some time together talking about issues kind of in a smaller format, and I always look forward to that as well.
What else is on the agenda in the conference? Because I know this lay involvement in bishops' accountability, what you started going down the road to cover in the fall before the Holy Father sent a letter saying, wait a minute, but now you're talking about that, and that has so dominated the conference. What else is on the agenda?
There's different points of conversation. One is some of it's liturgical, because we do a lot of liturgical things here, having to do with the ordination of bishop, priests, and deacons, kind of revising that. There's conversations about instructions on the preparation for the permanent diaconate. I always look forward to the moment when they bring up the possibility of a new saint in the church, and the bishop of, I think it's the bishop of Marquette's going to bring up asking for the conference's support, his nomination for a particular person in his diocese. So it's, you know, the dominant conversation will be on bishops' accountability, especially with, you know, even what we have faced, you know, in West Virginia with Bishop Bransfield. So there's many different things. Some are very heavy in content. Others are more joyful, like the progress of a particular person for sainthood.
Bishop Sticca, in talking informally with a couple bishops heading into the meetings, they both were of the mindset that we better come out of this meeting with some really concrete measures to take for the sake of the laity to see that we're making progress. Is that the feeling you get too?
Oh, yeah. You know, after the meeting in November, a lot of bishops were frustrated. You could understand why the Holy Father, you know, asked for the conference to kind of slow down a bit, getting ready for the meeting in February. But it was also very disheartening because this is a major issue in the church in the United States and throughout the world. And, you know, you can look at concrete ways to approach this, but there's also an emotional part of this that you have to keep balance of people in the pews who have just had enough and they want to see some concrete actions. And so hopefully the result of this meeting in Baltimore and will result in that something concrete that we can go back and say, look, this is what we've done.
Bishop Richard Sticca from the Diocese of Knoxville joining us live from Baltimore this morning. This is day number two of the Spring General Assembly of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, something that was set up after the Dallas meetings back in 2002, the National Review Board, this lay advisory group to the bishops protecting minors from abuse. They have asked for, and this was a part of the discussion yesterday, to release all of the documents relevant to the McCarrick investigation. How will the USCCB petition the Vatican to get those documents and make them public?
You know, that's above my pay grade, what that final result will be. I know, I think it was last week or the week before, the Cardinal Secretary of State in Rome said that, you know, the investigation is proceeding. And I know it's also occurring on local levels. I think four dioceses are doing their own investigations. I hope that something comes soon. You know, we're coming up to August when all this surfaced last year. You know, I know in my own diocese, you know, from time to time people will ask that where the McCarrick thing is. You know, it's like a 1-2 punch. You got McCarrick and what happened in West Virginia, plus all the stuff that's in between, the abuse that seems to trickle out with the grand jury reports and such. And so my hope is that the Holy See will release the final conclusive report. So at least we have something that we can find out why. How did he move up the ranks in terms of what people know and what people knew and what people didn't know, and as well as I think Archbishop Vigano just released an interview. I think it was in the Washington Post. You know, again, you know, he's trying to demonstrate that he was in the that he knew about these things, that he shared, and seems to have been stopped along the way some way, sometime.
Archbishop Sticca, or Bishop Sticca, we should say, what could the Vatican do?
Count on us. You could.
Yeah, there's breaking news from the meetings. Yes.
Yeah, we move everybody through very quickly on this program, Bishop Sticca.
Yeah. You put up with us long enough. You deserve something. Say, now, could the Vatican be more helpful? And if so, what would it be in this whole process?
You know, apparently all the paperwork is somewhere. And I wish that the Holy See would just, you know, like the Mueller report that came out in the United States, and everybody wanted to see what the results were, and then a lot of people didn't like the results or said it was inconclusive. I would like to see something nice and clean, substantial, an apology if necessary, and ways that this will not occur again. There's always a human dimension, huh? Yeah, you have to depend on humans to give their feedback. But, you know, I would like to see just a very conclusive report.
Bishop Richard Sticca is the Bishop of the Diocese of Knoxville, Tennessee, joining us live from Baltimore this morning, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. And Bishop Sticca, we continue to pray, as our relevant radio listeners do, that the Holy Spirit guide you and your brother bishops in Baltimore through another very busy day today, tomorrow, and of course, wrapping up with the day of prayer on Friday. We may check in with you by the end of the week. So thank you again for the generous amount of time you've given us live from Baltimore.
Excellent. I wish everybody a good day and God's blessing.
Bishop Richard Sticca from the Diocese of Knoxville joining us from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops Spring General Assembly in Baltimore. 5 before the hour, Glenn's Story Corner coming up after today's Saint of the Day. And it's a story of Blessed Yolanda. And the story really reads more like a fairy tale than a spiritual one. She was the daughter of the King of Hungary, and her sister was married to the Duke of Poland, and she used the blessing of material wealth to help others, building many hospitals, convents, and churches. Yolanda's husband died, and two of her daughters got married, so Yolanda and her third daughter entered the convent of the Poor Clares, and once again, Yolanda served by example. She had this very special devotion to the Passion of Christ. And when you take a look at her story, and I was mentioning it was a fairy tale, we know that fairy tales have happy endings, and so does this one, because Blessed Yolanda used her notoriety and her money to help the poor. And that's really a witness to you and me, is to use God's providence. Maybe it's our time, our talent, our treasure, whatever it is, for the common good, as we work to that eternal reward that goes beyond anything our earthly selves can imagine, right? That's Blessed Yolanda of Poland at 4 before the hour, in time for today's Glenn Story Corner.
Our story today is called At the End of Time. At the end of time, billions of people were scattered on a great plain before God's throne. Most shrank back from the brilliant light before them, but some groups near the front talked heatedly, not with cringing shame, but with belligerence. Can God judge us? How can he know about suffering? Snapped a young Albanian. He removes his shirt to reveal a bullet-scarred back. In Kosovo, we endured terror, shootings, torture. In another group, an aged Aboriginal woman pulled a crumpled, tear-stained photograph from her pockets. "What about this?" she demanded. "This is my precious child. I've not seen her since the day she was stolen away for no crime but being black." In another crowd, a pregnant schoolgirl with sullen eyes said, "Why should I suffer?" she murmured. "It wasn't my fault." Far out across the plain, there were hundreds of such groups. Each had a complaint against God for the evil and suffering that he permitted in this world. How lucky God was to live in heaven, where all was sweetness and light, where there was no weeping, no fear, no hunger or hatred. What did God know of all the people that had been forced to endure in this world? For God leads a pretty sheltered life, they said. So each of these groups sent forth their leader, chosen because he'd suffered the most. A Jew, a person from Hiroshima, a horribly deformed arthritic, a thalidomide child. In the center of the plain, they consulted with each other. At last, they were ready to present their case. It was rather clever. Before God could be qualified to be their judge, he must endure what they had endured. Their decision was God should be sentenced to live on earth as a man. Let him be born into a hated race. Let the legitimacy of his birth be doubted. Give him a work so difficult even his family will think him out of his mind when he tries to do it. Let him be betrayed by his closest friends. Let him face false charges. Let him be tried by a prejudiced jury and convicted by a cowardly judge. Let him be tortured. At the last, let him see what it means to be terribly alone. Then let him die. Let him die so there can be no doubt that he died. Let there be a great host of witnesses to verify it. As each leader announced his portion of the sentence, loud murmurs of approval went up from the throng of people assembled. And when the last had finished pronouncing sentence, there was a long silence. No one uttered another word. No one moved. For suddenly, all knew that God had already served his sentence. Isaiah 53:5 says, "But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him, and by his wounds we are healed."
The Glenn Story Corner podcast on our Relevant Radio app. Check it out. A minute before now on Morning Air on Relevant Radio.